The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning. It's nice to see you all. So when I was here, I guess it's 2 weeks ago now, I talked a little bit about the importance of being balanced in our practice. And that means a few things. One is to be balanced in terms of what we're paying attention to. Are we only paying attention to whether we're concentrated? Are we only paying attention to the sensations in our body? If so, we can get a little bit out of balance if we're only paying attention to certain aspects of our experience. And then I highlighted paying attention to energy. And what happens or what can happen if we discover or what are our experiences if there's too much energy? And often that gets manifested in two different ways, striving or restlessness. So that's what I talked about before. Now I'm going to take this the other way and say when we pay attention to energy, we may notice that we have too little energy. And how does that show up? And then if we have time, I'll talk about when is it just right? Kind of like Goldilocks, right? What do we do with our energy then? And the way that I think about this, that energy is like the capacity to do something, the willingness, just the feeling like, okay, I can do that. Whereas effort is the actual doing of something. Effort is like the application of energy into a particular way. Oh, this will become clear as I go on, but just wanted to make it clear how I'm using these words, energy and effort. So when I was here 2 weeks ago, I talked about this simile of the goldsmith. And without going into all the details, is the idea that our minds can be like gold. That is, that it can be softened, melted in a particular way, so that it can be malleable and wieldy, as well as if that can be a way to help purify it, right? If gold is in a softened state, is how we can purify it. And in this simile, the Buddha talks about blowing on the gold or the container that's holding the gold in order to increase the heat of the fire underneath it. And that's like energy. But if you notice that the gold is getting too hot, and I don't know what that looks like, I'm not a goldsmith, but to cool it down a little bit is to sprinkle water on it. So, and in the simile, that's like concentration. So concentration is kind of the opposite of energy, and they definitely balance each other, energy and concentration. I'm using this word concentration, but we could substitute in kind of like a certain calmness that then slips into drowsiness or, you know, something like this. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. So there's a number of reasons why we could have not enough energy. One could be if we had just previously had too much energy. We were striving, and now we're just kind of collapsed. We're exhausted from this. Not only the effort or the energy it takes to strive, but also the kind of the thoughts that we can have in our minds, like, dang it, I'm trying so hard and it's not working. I may as well just give up. You know, those thoughts may not be so explicit, but we often can have that kind of feeling after we really are trying for something and we just feel frustrated and disappointed, and after our effort doesn't yield the consequences or what we're expecting or what we want. So then there's just, for me, I feel this is a type of collapse, kind of like, oh, okay, well, I guess I can't do it. Or, you know, this dialogue that happens. And if it's during a meditation period when I experience this, I don't experience this so much now, but earlier in my meditation practice, there would be a type of giving up. Like, well, I'll just wait for this dang bell to ring. And then, you know, instead of kind of like backing off on the energy or noticing what's happening, just kind of letting go of any energy or effort. So that's one reason why we may find ourselves with low energies in a response to striving or not having the precise outcome that we were hoping for with the energy that we have been spending using, the effort we've been making. Another reason why we may have low energy is we may have an unexamined and very deep commitment to comfort. This idea that we must be comfortable and cozy, which kind of, you know, has that feeling of being wrapped up in warm blankets with hot chocolate. Like, that's the aim of life, and so that's what we're always trying to get toward. So there can be kind of a dipping of our energy if we feel like that's the purpose of our practice, or even what the goal of life is. There certainly is a place for comfort. We definitely need it. It's part of the human experience, and it's appropriate to want it. But if we are always looking for comfort, if we always want to stay in our comfort zone, pretty soon our comfort zone starts to get smaller and smaller. Our lives start to lose some of their vitality, and there's less room for serendipity and exciting, interesting things. So this commitment to comfort, it should be more like some wise discernment. Like, when is it wise to have comfort? Of course, if we're in the middle of some really difficult experiences, whether they're emotions or some physical things, or we're sick, of course comfort is the right thing to do. And of course we often comfort others. But we need to have discernment. It's okay to be outside of our comfort zone. That's when we learn. That's when our lives get exciting. And that's when, like, you know, new interesting things happen. And of course, if we want to have our lives be exactly the same and never grow, we can stay there. But often, why we lose energy is because we have a feeling that our life is always the same, not growing. Right? We have a sense of boredom or discouragement or something like that. So just an encouragement to notice when you're always trying to, or maybe I shouldn't even use that word always, when you have this wanting to stay in your comfort zone. It's okay to get out of our comfort zone. And to use wisdom about when to do that and when not to. Related to that, another reason why our energy can dip is if self-care, which sometimes is comfort, but sometimes just self-care, slips into indulgence. Right? And that's a slippery slope. And this also requires wisdom. I saw myself just doing this yesterday. I wanted to do some strengthening exercises. Right? This is common, right? All of us could use some strength, you know, some physical strength. And I was telling myself, oh, Dani, you did them yesterday, and you don't want to get sore. Don't do them again today. These are the type of exercises. They're not the ones, I'm not lifting weights, right? I'm just trying to strengthen my back a little bit. I could do these the next day, but I was just about ready to, you know, telling myself this dialogue, oh, you don't need to do it. You went for a long walk yesterday. You don't want to get too tired. You have things to do. You know, this kind of not doing any, exerting any energy. Instead of using some wisdom, some discernment, like, okay, well, maybe I did this yesterday, I could just take it easier today as opposed to not doing it at all, right? Because then I think many of us have this experience. Applying effort creates the conditions for applying more effort. This goes against our thinking, but once you're kind of energetic doing things, it's often easier to just do the next thing as opposed to, you know, it takes sometimes a huge barrier to get started after you've stopped. I think many of us have this experience in so many things, right? So it's actually a little less energy just to keep going in whatever way that looks at. So this idea of self-care, though, again, is important. To just to notice the narrative, the dialogue we have that we're telling ourselves. And that can be a cue. Is this a little bit of indulgence or is it self-care? And how it can be a cue for me, I've discovered, if I've created this elaborate story that I'm telling myself over and over and over again, it could be, that is, I'm trying to justify, like, okay, I should stay in bed here or not do this. And then I somehow have to convince myself, so I'm repeating this. But if it's self-care, there can be a kind of wisdom, a kind of knowing, like the right thing to do now is to sleep or rest or whatever it may be. So that's just something to notice, kind of the narrative that's going on. That can help be a indicator whether self-care has slipped into indulgence. A fourth reason why there might be low energy is we may be disconnected from our aspirations. We may be disconnected from what brings meaning to our lives, disconnected from our hopes and dreams. If we find ourselves, for whatever reason, maybe we're feeling discouraged or we feel sad or these types of things, if we're not really connected to what's important to us, we can lose energy. We can lose the willingness to make a little bit of effort if we don't have a goal in mind. But again, this takes wisdom too, right? Because all our actions aren't going to give us the goal, the outcome that we want. All of us have this experience, right? But we just so often need to be reminded of the two things. One, to notice when we have expectations. It's appropriate to have expectations. Of course we have expectations, right? Because we have experiences. I know that if I do strengthening exercises, I'm going to get stronger. That's happened. So that's my expectation. But we have to hold them lightly. Like, you know, there's a simile that goes something like, it's actually going the opposite direction, but it's the same idea. That if there's a person who wields an axe, so somebody who's like a woodcutter, do a lot of woodcutting using this axe, eventually the handle of the axe gets worn down, just a tiny bit, and the blade of the axe gets worn down. But you can't ever point to exactly that moment in which the blade became dull or the handle got worn down. Right? These are slow, gentle processes. So to keep that in mind, that we may have expectations, aspirations, but to hold them lightly and not to expect that we're just going to wake up one morning and it's going to be abundantly clear. And for me, that's actually comforting, that because I have this, I think you probably have this experience too. Easy come, easy go, right? And so things that are worth having take a little bit of effort, some persistence and some diligence, and the change may be imperceptible each time, but it's more durable. It's something that we can count on. So when we have low energy, one way that it can show up is sleepiness. And that can just be due to lack of sleep. There's nothing complicated about that, just lack of sleep. But if we do have this intention to have some wakefulness, we can just look at our lives. What are we doing? What are our priorities? How are we spending our time? What are the conditions that we are creating that lead to sleepiness? Well, those are obvious. I don't have to tell you this, you know, bedtimes and screen times and caffeine, all those types of things. There's a verse in the Dhammapada, which is a collection of verses. It's the Dhammapada is one of the best or most well-known collections of scriptures in the Buddhist tradition. I did a little research on this a number of years ago. It's amazing. I think there's something like maybe 40 different translations of this. It's quite something. And Gil Fronsdal, the founder here, right, he has his own translations of the book on the Dhammapada, which I use, kind of aligned with Gil's teachings and the way he translates. And then maybe I'll just take a little aside. The translations are really different. And part of the reason is because Pali, the ancient language this is written in, when it's written in verse, they're following a very particular meter. You know, like, I forget what, like, Shakespeare's this pentameter or something or other. So that means in order for the Pali to meet the meter, they are really loose with the grammar. And sometimes don't bother to put in verbs or don't bother to put in the subjects, or they put things, you know, or they use these really esoteric versions of words that, you know, we don't know. Like it's only ever used in that particular verse. Nobody's quite sure what it means. So that's why there's so many different translations and why the translations can change so much. It's a little aside. So here's Gil Fronsdal's translation of this one particular verse. Vigilant among the negligent, wide awake among the sleeping, the wise one advances like a swift horse, leaving a weak one behind. I'll say this one more time. Vigilant among the negligent, wide awake among the sleeping, the wise one advances like a swift horse, leaving a weak one behind. Sure, this makes sense, right? Diligence, vigilance is going to help us go forward, advance whatever our aspirations are. Unlike not applying those, sleeping through whatever it is that we're doing, can, whether this is literal sleepiness or there can be a certain type of sleepwalking, right? Where we're not really connected to our life. We're not connected to what's happening. We're just going through the motions. So instead here the Buddha is pointing to both literal wakefulness, because in other verses, other places in the scriptures, he uses this word to describe practicing at night while others are sleeping. So that's talking about literal wakefulness, as opposed to, I'm interpreting it as kind of metaphorical wakefulness, just being attentive to what's actually happening, applying our energy in this way. So some people take up meditation, start a meditation practice, because they want to calm down. And then it turns out that they start to meditate, and in fact they do get calm. There's a certain settling, but that trajectory just keeps on going. They just get more and more calm, and then find themselves falling asleep. It's not unusual, especially for people earlier in their meditation practice. That certainly was my experience, especially if I'm sitting in a chair. For me, it happens less when I'm sitting on a cushion. But this kind of like feeling restless and then going right past the balance part and going down to falling asleep. But that doesn't happen as much for me now that I have some more meditation hours under my belt. And I was really interested to see that a couple of researchers who are themselves very serious meditators have done neuroimaging studies, neurological studies, patient-reported outcomes, you know, self-reports, to look at this phenomenon. And they discovered that it's so common in for people earlier in their meditation career, but later in their meditation career, the opposite happens. And this is actually happening for me now too, which is really nice, that there's, you kind of get to a certain calmness, but then there's a little energy that comes up, a really beautiful, nice energy that kind of leads some brightness to the mind, maybe it's and so maybe some clarity about what's happening, and it kind of uplifts the heart too. So they have scientific data to show that this is in fact what happens. So that's a little bit of encouragement if you're finding that when you sit down to meditate, you find yourself just getting a little bit of tired. It's perfectly natural. This is what happens. But as they're attributing the increase in energy to some neuroplasticity, the mind, it just takes, as you kind of lay down tracks, quote-unquote, I'll just use this word, tracks, then it just takes less energy to pay attention. And so there's more efficiency. And then the increase in energy is just often due to clarity and seeing things. But another experience of not having enough energy could be just the classic hindrance, what the kind of in the Buddhist tradition calls a hindrance, of sloth and torpor. I actually love these words. I never use these words, sloth or torpor, except to say this, right? They're kind of this obscure words. But how I interpret them, I'm not alone interpreting this way, like torpor, you know, that kind of feeling, right? Where your mind is just like foggy and sleepy and it's in it just can't quite move. It's the opposite of wieldy. It's the opposite of malleable. It's the opposite of bright. It's kind of feels a sluggishness of the mind, this like a sinking state. Like sometimes it may feel like a heavy blanket or something, right? You know, that just kind of like is on you, which it has a certain amount of, it's not too much unpleasant, but it's not really pleasant either because it's not joyful or it doesn't have a sense of brightness to it. Perhaps you have this experience like being a passenger in a car or on the bus or on the train for hours, right? Your mind, my mind, I should say, just gets this feeling of, torpor, right? It's just kind of feeling this lack of brightness and this, I like this word, unwieldy. It just, you feel kind of like stuck in a certain way. Whereas sloth often can be more the physical sensations, whereas torpor is the mental. Sloth can be the physical of just not having the energy to move. These often go together, right? They're distinct, but we could feel like a heaviness in the body. It can also just feel, you know, kind of like collapsing physically. The shoulders go forward, the head go forward. And we all know this, right? I heard somebody describe this as, they called it the Zen jerk, I think, right? When you're sleeping, you know, I've done this and it really hurt my neck, so. So this sleepiness or dullness, if you ever go on a retreat, you'll notice, and all the retreat teachers talk about this, often the first day or the second day, this is the dominant experience of just being exhausted. And it's often a combination of sloth and torpor and sleepiness. When we're on retreat and we're removed from the stimulation that happens, talking with people, checking our phone, you know, getting angry or falling in love with things or just doing things that really please us, or drinking lots of Diet Coke or coffee or tea or whatever it is that may give us caffeine, or somehow looking things up on Google, right? There can be like a certain, like a little hit of energy when you do that. When we get removed from all these external things that provide energy, and this removal often happens on retreat, we can notice how dependent we've become on them, and our energy can really droop. And also I'll say, to go on retreat, it's a big deal. I took essentially kind of drop out of society for a week. And so there was a lot of preparation. I've done a lot of retreat practice, and I'm still amazed. Like, just things to take care of. And then, yeah, there's just a lot of energy to not only make sure we're bringing the right things, but all our responsibilities are taken care of, and the plants are watered, the bathroom is cleaned, you know, this type of stuff before we go. So often we're just physically tired, too, when we arrive. So this feeling of sloth and torpor. Early in my meditation career, now when I look back on this, I'm just amazed about this, that I attended a retreat. I don't remember how many days it was. It may have been only like 2 full days or 3 full days, so a shorter retreat. And right before going on to retreat, I was getting up really early to do some particular things. So I was sleep deprived. And so I showed up, and you know, you usually show up in the evening, and then the next day is all meditation. And I was staying in a room that wasn't too far from the meditation hall. First sit, I'm okay, I'm awake. Like, oh, I better take a nap before breakfast, right? It's only like 15, 20 minutes, but I just felt exhausted to go to the room, sleep, literally sleep 15 minutes. The bell for breakfast, get up, go to breakfast. I'm exhausted, go back, sleep, hear the bell for the next thing, wake up, go. The entire day, the only thing I did, sleep, hear the bell, wait, go to the meditation hall. In the meditation hall, I'd be alert and sitting up in my cushion. As soon as the bell at the end of the meditation, I'd go back to my room and sleep. And then the bell would ring. I don't recommend this as a way to do a retreat, but I was amazed that this was even possible, right? To just like sleep, what, 12 different times, 15 different times during the day. So clearly there was something other than just lack of tiredness going on. And then that gets me to, like, what are some of the causes of sloth and torpor? Kind of like classically given when this shows up in the context of meditation. Difficult emotions. Turns out, right, if you're asleep, you're not in the midst of your difficult emotions. And that was what was going on for me. My life, I had things that were difficult. And I didn't really have the savviness to know. I just thought it was because I was sleep deprived. But it wasn't, you know, until later I realized, oh no, there was more to that. I was just felt overwhelmed, didn't really know how to go forward. So I just collapsed into sleep. So if you find this real wanting to just sleep and lay down, just ask yourself, just do a check-in. Is there something going on here? I want to say that sometimes it is appropriate, right? Again, this some discernment. Sometimes there are really awful things that happen to us and to other people that we love and care about. And we have really strong, difficult emotions. Terrible grief, for example. Maybe sleep can really help us with that. There can be experiencing the grief, and then maybe there's a time to sleep too, to recover and recharge. So I don't want to say that, you know, you should never sleep in the midst of difficult emotions. Maybe sometimes anger, if we feel that we're just so angry and want to lash out and we feel overwhelmed by it, maybe it can be a little more skillful to just go lay down and experience it and let it dissipate. So again, use some wisdom and some discernment. But also, there can be a subtle belief that's not, that we're not really aware of, but it's often those beliefs that we're not aware of that are pushing us around, that are really influencing how we behave, how we interpret, what we experience. And we might think that retreating from difficulties is the best way to work with them. This can get played out in so many ways in our lives, right? But just feeling exhausted when some difficulty arises is an obvious manifestation of them. But I think all of us have this experience, and there's a part of us that knows that often difficulties, the best way to work with them is to find our way through them. We don't actually get to go around them, even though we think that we can. It doesn't quite work that way. All of us know this, right? Difficulties just show up in some other form, in some other way. This takes practice. But to just notice, what is your default or most common way to do when you come up with a challenge? Whether it's the challenge of fixing that thing on your computer that you don't understand why it's doing that now, do you just throw up your hands and stop using the computer, or, you know, just do something? Or do you take a deep breath and like, okay, let's see if I can figure this out? So just notice kind of what your response is often to challenges or difficulties. Sometimes our collapsing can be a way that doesn't serve us, doesn't help us have the best life that we can have. Another thing that can cause kind of low energy is overeating. And I'm a little bit fascinated that when we look at the scriptures, there's actually this topic of eating comes up a lot. And it makes sense when you think not 1,000, not 2,000, but 2,600 years ago. That's a long time ago. Eating, right? It was just a main, that was one of their major, like procuring food, fixing food, right? They don't have all the modern conveniences. That was a big part of their life, was how to eat, what to eat. That's how medicine was too, was how to eat and what to eat. And, you know, back then, so there's a big emphasis on eating in the Buddhist scriptures. But unlike how contemporary modern times, when I'm now talking about overeating, and this is often our concern, is overeating. Back then was also this idea of some religious practitioners would undereat to starve themselves. It was a part of an ascetic practice and was believed to support liberation. They may have defined liberation different than the Buddhists did. In fact, the Buddha, if you know the story of his life, he did spend some time nearly starving himself to death as these extreme ascetic practices. And the Jains, they actually, which was a rival religious tradition at the time, they would promote this idea of starvation, sometimes even to death. So food and eating is a big focus. So not only don't eat too much, which can lead to low energy, but don't eat too little also, which can lead to low energy. So just to notice, and a contemporary interpretation of this, I would expand eating to what do we consume? Food. I'm thinking also like news, you know, music that's like always going. Are we always in loud sounds? Certain types of music may be okay, but other types of music may take energy and sap what energy that we have. So if you notice that your energy isn't right, just to pay attention to food and drink and your environment. So what can we do if we find ourselves with having this sinking mind, this sloth and torpor? For me, I actually like the instructions for this. When I realized what the instructions were, for me, that itself kind of like brought up some energy, and I felt like, oh, of course. And it is based on this general idea of essentially What if we stop making it being a problem? What if we stop saying, like, this is something terrible that I must get rid of. It shouldn't be this way. There's the talks about how we should be wakeful and we should have energy and the right amount of energy, and this is terrible. Instead, what if we just say, like, oh, I feel low energy. How does this feel? Is it in both my mind and my body, or is it just the body? If it's in the body, is it my eyes? Do I feel like I'm falling asleep, like my eyes want to close? Is it a collapsing, you know, like going forward or going backward? Or, I'll just say, just like a falling or a leaning or, you know, just losing our uprightness. Or is it more this fogginess of mind? So instead of saying, like, oh, got to get rid of this, it's more like, what is this? And just that, asking that question, what is this, just brings a little bit of energy in, right? This investigation, curiosity. And we may have this assumption, a perfectly valid assumption, that things need to be crystal clear in order for us to be mindful of them or to know them. We may like things to have kind of distinct edges. This is clearly that. It's not this, it's that. But we can have like foggy, cottony, fluffy, I don't know, experiences in our mind that we could just make a little mental note, diffuse, or foggy. Something like that, right? Rather than something that's really sharp. So that's one thing that we can do, is to just investigate, bring mindfulness to what's happening. Bring some curiosity to it. And then if we're meditating, we can meditate with a little bit more vigor. And what I mean by that is we can start to use a noting practice if we're not. So that is to make a quiet little word in your mind, kind of like a whisper in the back of your mind. When the there's a number of ways you can do this. You could say, make a little note, inhale or in or whatever. Or I'll say this for the in breath. You can do in. And then say out for the out breath. But then to add a little bit more energy, you can also add, feel the sensation of the pressure of the cushion or the ground or the chair against your body. And you can also add a hearing. So now you're paying attention to quite a few things. In breath, sound, pressure, out breath, in breath. Out, in, sound, pressure, right? So just having this kind of speeding up the cadence in some ways of what we're paying attention to, and that requires just enough little extra energy that it can help support having energy. So maybe I'll stop there with this idea of it's helpful to have balance, right? I don't need to tell you this. We all know this. And we can look at our energy and to have the balance of not too much, which I spoke about before, and not too little, which can be a sleepiness or kind of this sloth and torpor. So we have some time now for some questions. Thank you.
I've been wanting to ask this for some time, so, and it does seem to fit, although I'm not sure. I'd had a tendency in meditation to sort of just, thoughts would just disappear and I'm just more hanging out. So I really wanted to pay attention to thoughts. So I was paying attention to thoughts. And then it got lower. And then, I think this is very common, but it hadn't been for me. Some people might call it daydreaming, but it's not like I'm hanging out there. But I would just become aware that my mind is generating stories and images that don't mean anything. I mean, I'm really aware that they don't mean anything, or they're nonsensical or unreal. They don't relate to anything in my life. So as I've paid attention, they've gotten a little more varied. And there's a kind of a on edge of sleepiness, right, while that's happening. So I just wondered whether to, I know it's not a place, I don't want to get interested in the stories, because that's just, unless I want to write a novel or something. Because I think there's a lot of creativity there, actually.
Absolutely.
But where do I go from that? Do I just keep going deeper with that and just kind of watching till something else settles and goes deeper? Or do I pull back off of that and focus my attention somewhere else?
So let me ask you, what's the quality of your mind, or the daydreaming that you're
having? I feel aware and alert while I'm watching it. So I'm aware that it's going on. Although there is sort of this little bit of sleepiness or torpor, a little bit of that heaviness. Especially if I go too far into it, I can feel that. Mm-hmm. So then I wonder if they're just hypnagogic images, right? Because I'm familiar with those. If that's the case, then I probably need to move more into a state of alertness. But I don't know.
Okay, so this sounds great. It sounds like you're just noticing the quality of your mind, and the mind does get more and more quiet. And this is what happens. Often we have this idea that, you know, the thoughts should just go away. But there's this place where they just are arising and passing, as you're experiencing. And then they just seem not so compelling, right? They're just doing whatever it is that thoughts do. Because that's what minds do. They like to make thoughts. So I think this is great. So to notice the quality of the mind is fantastic. So, and that's a little bit of a trick, or is that the right word? So we're so often used to paying attention to objects, but then when the objects get wispy and aren't really so important, then we kind of turn towards the mind. And that's a different experience. But you could drop in something I'm sure Andrea talks about this, something like, am I aware?
Yeah, so that, I mean, this is partly in a context of a practice with awareness, so just keep doing, that's
yeah.
pretty much what I'm
yeah, it sounds
attempting
great.
To do, anyway. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And then behind you.
I find that sometimes avoidance of difficulty is something I do need to do as a short-term strategy, then I have to be extremely mindful to not let it deteriorate into a long-term strategy, because I'm avoiding this for now, but it's like still circling. It's like a rotating stove where the back burner sometimes turns into the front burner. okay, it's on the back burner now, but the stove's going to rotate, and that back burner is going to be the front burner in a little bit. So
what supports that? What supports your knowing, now is not the right time to work with this, but maybe later will? And when things come around to the front burner, is that because you said to yourself, okay, now's the time to work with this? Or did it just make itself known again and you realize, oh, I've been ignoring this, I guess I better?
It's kind of 50-50. I just have to make sure that it's not a maybe later, it's definitely later. So So it's just and be observant of when that's coming around. So it's a lot of it's just intuition and observance that I don't know if there's a definite fixed criteria that I could name.
Yeah. So I the only risk here, this sounds like it's working for you and it isn't a problem, but I would just say in general then is that we often don't see what our underlying, what's causing things, the stove to rotate. We aren't seeing that if we're just always responding to the stove rotating. So to somehow create the conditions and where you're like, okay, I'm not going to have this stove rotate, then you may become apparent, like what's underlying that, and a way to take some of that.
You need to make sure you're venting the air over the stove so that you can see the stove.
Right?
I'm just making this up off the top of my head now, but I think it's still right.
Yeah, for me, I've noticed that I've taken to writing down. I have an app on my phone and on my computer, to-do items. Because when I notice, like, oh, I don't want to, I write that down for a particular time, and then I get a little, notice, do this thing that I don't want to do. I find that's actually really helpful. Because even that little ding, Diana, it's time to do, X, Y, Z, just to notice my reaction at that moment. And also sometimes I actually do those things, right? So I just offer that. That's something that I've been doing. Because I noticed that I, of course, like to avoid difficulties and things often just get worse.
Oh, yes.
Right? And I would want to prevent them from getting worse. So,
yeah. Well, my brother has a metaphor of the bartender. The bartender doesn't wait for a certain amount of mess to accumulate before cleaning the bar. The bartender is literally always cleaning. He's just always alert for a little bit of mess, and then as soon as he sees it, he attacks it. And so he's told me to be like a bartender.
Sure, that's true, right? Things often get worse, bigger, messier, right? The more time we spend.
I had an experience that falls into this category very nicely. On a long retreat, after lunch every day, I would go to the library and sit in one of the comfortable armchairs at the retreat center, and the sunlight was streaming through the windows, and, it was very quiet and peaceful. And I was engaged in this, in a sense, a battle with sleepiness, because I would do this thing you were describing, where I would nod, and then I would jerk back up, and it was extremely unpleasant. But there was something there. I mean, I felt like there was something there to do, a piece of work, if you will. And I used inquiry, just as you said, what is this? What is this? Just what is this? And kept bringing myself back to that question, particularly, when I would fall and then I'd come back. What's going on? And at some point, I saw, that's not exactly literally true, but figuratively, I saw something in my mind just turn off, and then I would drop. And the seeing completely wiped it away.
Mm-hmm.
And for the rest of that long retreat, I would go to the library after lunch and sit totally awake. It didn't happen again.
Fantastic.
That seeing does some kind of, purification, we talk about it, or how insight like that can change things, really fundamentally, deeply change things.
Mm, this is fantastic. This so often is the case, right? When we finally, it's kind of like the magicians, right? When you finally understand the trick, how the magic trick is done, you're just not so interested anymore. So when you see something, it can really shift.
But it was physical, too. I mean, it changed the mental and the physical components. Both were interplaying there. And it was a really important moment for me.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. I'm happy to hear this.
I'm pretty new to all of this. I use the Jon Kabat-Zinn tapes for stress reduction, and I found that I would frequently, I think, fall asleep because it was a coping mechanism.
Sure.
And I notice when I'm here, I don't fall asleep. So it's good for me to be here.
Mm, we're happy that you're here. When you listen to the tapes, are you by yourself?
Yes.
And are you lying down?
I'm lying down.
Yes.
Yes. That's the problem, right?
I wouldn't say it's the problem. It may be just what's needed, right? MBSR is a perfectly valid way. If you're having some difficulties, it's perfect. Maybe that's just what's needed. Our hearts and our minds and our bodies sometimes need to rest as a way to work through things. So it's great to have a balance, right? Sometimes to be upright and to be practicing the skills of meditation and learn more about it. Sometimes I've listened to Jon Kabat-Zinn's tapes. He has a beautiful voice. It's very comforting and nice. And
maybe too comforting.
I think it's okay.
Could you talk a little bit about the relationship between walking meditation and sitting meditation in relation to this topic too, because often I find that if I'm getting tired, things are just too settled and physically, and I'm getting a little foggy, then walking can be helpful, or walking can be helpful for preparation for meditation. So can you talk about
that? Yeah. I think you said it, Randy. That's exactly right. If we find that our energy is really dipping and we're committed to meditation, to just do some walking meditation. In fact, that's why on retreat they alternate walk and sit, walk and sit. And not only can it help bring our energy up if we find that we're like really too low, but it also can help bring energy down if we feel like we're feeling too restless. Sometimes just to do some walking back and forth can be a way to just let the mind settle, but still be doing something. And sometimes the activity of doing while also sitting is just what's needed. Yeah, there's a number of things. If we find that we're sleeping, walking is one. And then the obvious things like opening your eyes, using your body, having a little more alertness, some energy in your physical form. Pull on your earlobes, which I've never actually done, but standing up, thank you. That's a great one, standing up. Sometimes what I have done is I would hold my breath just a little bit, because that just like wakes the system up a little bit, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, right, here I am. But most often I will open my eyes, but not look at things, but just have light come in that just reminds your body that you're not in bed, getting ready to go to sleep. Okay, so may you have a day with just the right amount of energy. Thank you.